This audio comes from the collections of the Lesbian and Gay Archives of New Zealand. For more information, visit lagans.org.nz.
...will follow if they know that their masters and tutors are indulging in these unnatural practices, and if they know that the law of the land will allow it. What effect will this have on the moral fibre of these boys, some of them quite young and under 21? The practices are illegal, and yet suddenly on the morning of their 21st birthday, they can do what they like, and they are legal. A bulwark which will defy evil influences which are seeking to undermine the very foundation of our national character. Defy them. Do not help them. I've heard some say, and indeed the noble Earl said so himself, that such practices are allowed in France and in NATO countries. We're not French. And we're not other nationals. We are British, thank God. This is some of the thoughts of Lord Montgomery in this regard. It was my intention, Mr. Speaker, to read further evidence that came forward to suit my case, I will admit. But I won't weary the House with that because I think the subject's been covered very amply, and I know the House is ready, I believe, to vote. So finally, could I say... Expressed in the simplest terms, I suggest that the issue is this. Is this House, or is it not, to give a lead to the New Zealand people by agreeing to a bill which will have the effect of undermining the moral fibre of the youth of our country? That's my feelings, Mr. Speaker.
Right Honourable Sir Keith Holyoake.
Thank God I am not as other men. I thought there was one small element of that in the quotation, at least. The Honourable Member for Rodney will excuse me for...
Hobson,
I'm sorry, excuse me for taking that line. Mr. Speaker, the thought of homosexual acts is absolutely abhorrent and repulsive to me, but who am I to judge? Sir, I'm not going to compliment the Member for, not fulsomely at least, the Member for Egmont for his courage and so on. I wish he'd take his jolly bill away. I wish we never heard of it. I wish we never hear of these questions. Wish the problems would go away. And I suppose having said that, then one has to join the others and say compliments to him for his courage in bringing something forward that we all wish was not brought forward, and that the problem itself would simply dissolve and disappear. Beg pardon? However, the problem is there, and from time to time these questions, whether moral, legal, emotional, whatever they are, they will arise and have public common currency and be discussed and have to be settled. 2 years ago, I confess quite openly, 2 years ago, perhaps 1 year ago, I would have voted against such a proposition as this. Today I will vote for it. Seeing that homosexual acts are obnoxious to me, and I think to just about all of us, or the very great majority of us, then my, and I suppose our natural instinct is to vote against any change in the law. I think this is the natural thing to do. Lash out against the law or any proposal to change the law because we don't like the context of the subject that is dealt with. That's a natural emotional reaction. But I believe we must use more than that, and we use judgment as far as we can and whatever logic we have. So I'm not going to, at this stage of the debate, going to go over all, or very, and indeed I'll go over very few of the arguments that have been adduced by other members, for and against, except I want to say this, that I am not convinced that the present sanctions in the law have achieved very much. I won't say they haven't achieved anything, but I don't think they've achieved enough in balance to warrant their continuation. The member for Rodney it was that quoted a lot of figures in respect to convictions and the law and the kind of penalties that have been imposed. I'm sorry I didn't listen closely enough to him before he came to that passage in his speech. And I have to ask him whether I'm correct when I say I imagine he was dealing with all the offences taken under these headings, not with the offences in the narrow range in which this bill deals, and that is homosexual acts between consenting adults in private. After all, this law doesn't alter all the rest of them, and it would have been interesting if he had the figures, and I presume he had, I haven't seen them, if he had figures to show how many cases had been brought that would be affected by this amendment to the law. Yes, but for all kinds of homosexual acts, not just for homosexual acts of the very narrow range which are dealt with in this proposed amendment. Is it fun? Well, what is the difference? The difference is that the member for Rodney quoted figures to prove something, to prove that we should not carry this amendment. He was dealing with figures that have nothing to do whatever with this amendment. That's the point I'm making. Or if they had, I shouldn't say whatever, but only to a very, very small extent, I believe.
Very few people
have gone to jail. Well, it's natural to begin with if they're performed in private, in secret. Naturally, not many are detected, although, of course, some are. I thought the figures were misleading in that he quoted the wider field of homosexual acts committed against the law and how the courts had treated them. It was an interesting comment, but I felt it was mainly, not wholly, but mainly irrelevant to this proposed amendment. I would think, sir, of course, that it's been mentioned by other members. Sorry, I've got a heavy cold on me. Mentioned by other members that the very nature of the homosexual acts that we are discussing, that is, homosexual acts committed by males, consenting males in private, naturally not many of them, are detected and come before the courts. And for that very reason, then the existing law has very little application and is virtually in effect. However, sir, I want to speak very briefly. The main points that have determined me to vote in favor of the law have been stated so often. Very briefly, I repeat them. I believe there should be no difference in the treatment and the law of males and females, and that has been dealt with at great length, and I say no more about it. Secondly, I ask myself, does the present law, has the present law, prevented or deterred homosexual acts between males? I would think, no one can prove this, but I would think to some extent, but very, very minor. I would have thought the advantage here would have been so minimal that it would not weigh heavily with me, at least, as against the disadvantages under the existing law. Would the proposed amendment tend to increase the number of homosexual acts between males, adult males? From my experience, from what I have learned and what I have heard, I doubt it. If it would, it would be only to a very, very minimal effect, and indeed we could not prove that this was so. I am certainly not convinced that the floodgates would be opened. Indeed, I am utterly convinced that that argument is wrong. I am impressed also by the statement of the member for Egmont, verified by some other members of the select committee which took the evidence, that everybody, every person and every organization giving evidence to the committee was asked this specific question. Every church, every, thank you, every, I'm corrected, every church was asked this specific question. Or perhaps not in these exact words, but in this sense. If the existing law was as is now proposed in this amending bill, if the existing law was as is now proposed in this amending bill, would you be proposing and crusading to change it? To change it to what the law is at the present time? And after proper thought and consideration, the member and others confirmed that all the churches said no. We would not be asking for the law to be changed to what it is at the present time. With the exception of one, I think, small section of the Anglican Church, an evangelical section, a crusading section. So I think that is the heart and the center core of the whole question. Is the existing law an anachronism? Are we clinging to it, or are some people clinging to it simply because it's there? If it were not there, as it is not there for females, would there be a crusade to change it today to what is now the existing sanction under our law? I am certain there would not. There would not be a widespread crusade. I doubt whether there'd be a crusade at all. If there were one, it would be, I believe, very, very minor, very, very minor indeed. This to me, sir, is a very important aspect of the whole question. Sir, I'm also influenced by experiences that I've had in public life, in offices that I've held in this house and in this country. The knowledge I have of people in quite high places, thank you so much, in quite high places, exercising considerable responsibility and judgment, and indeed influence, but who were homosexuals or homosexually inclined, being subject to blackmail. To blackmail and mental torture as a result, and all that stems from that mental torture. Well, the way it affected their whole lives, their relationships in their families, and indeed with other people.
Police have no knowledge.
Pardon?
Police have no knowledge. They told
us that. Police have no knowledge that what I say is correct. Yes. Pardon? No. I accept what the member said. All I'm saying is that I have knowledge of it. I have knowledge of it. I have personal knowledge of it, and of the mental torture and the spiritual torture, and that these people. That these people went through, and to the number who are still alive, I suppose, still going through. I'm not saying that they should not have some mental experience, some mental torture in this field, because as I say, and I've said right at the outset, and I'm still of the same opinion, that homosexual acts between males, females for that matter as well, we are talking about males, is abhorrent to me. It's an obnoxious thing. It is to me an unnatural thing and an abnormal thing. And so I suppose anybody experiencing this for whatever reason, whether they're born with these tendencies, whether they acquire them, whether they're forced upon them through their environment or whatever, I suppose it's a natural thing again that they will suffer some mental torture and pay some price in that respect. But from the experiences that I have in the positions which I held, convinced me that these people suffered too great a penalty. This is only something that one can use one's own judgment on again, as one person observing another. What penalty should they pay? And I believe that the cases that I know of, these people suffered too great a penalty, too great a mental and spiritual torture. Because of the fear of discovery, because of the fear of publication, indeed because of the possibility of the exercise of the law as it exists today. That again, perhaps more than any other thing with me, has decided me to persuaded me to vote in favor of the amendment. I repeat again that 2 years ago, perhaps 1 year ago, I would have been difficult to have convinced me to support the law, but today I do support the amendment. Today I do support it.
Mr. Birch.
Speaker, like most, like many members in this House on both sides, I've had very considerable difficulty in deciding whether I should support or oppose the private member's bill of my colleague, the member for Egmont. Like him, I have considerable compassion for the problems of the homosexual. Problems which the homosexual and many others, including many highly qualified, believe that the problems are centred around the intrusion of the statutes into moral issues. In an effort to fully understand how the Crimes Act created additional pressures on those with homosexual tendencies, I joined the member for Egmont in a number of early discussions with the Homosexual Law Reform Society. Like others, at those discussions, I was very impressed with the ability and quality of those who were supporting homosexual law reform. But this is not an issue where one can or should look at the law solely through the eyes of those directly involved, but one must rather consider in one's own conscience the effect of changing the laws on society at large. I have found, after very long consideration, that I believe that homosexual behaviour is not a behaviour that I could accept as normal, nor would I wish to take part in any action that would be seen to condone, encourage, or even passively accept homosexual practice. And it is for that particular reason, sir, I find that I am unable to support the bill. I believe that to support the bill would be seen to condone, even though passively, homosexual behaviour. So it is then with much regret that I am unable to support the member for Egmont. I also greatly regret that there is this anomaly in the law whereby action by female homosexuals in private is seen to be and is within the law, and action by male homosexuals in private is outside the law. I take the point that has been made by the member for Egmont and many others when he raises the question that if one is not able to support his bill, then should one not be promoting law or an amendment to bring female homosexuals within the Crimes Act as well. I would answer the member for Egmont in this way, that I am not satisfied until society is prepared to provide more positive assistance with those with homosexual behaviour, and until society is prepared to concentrate more of its resources into a study of the inherent influences which brings about homosexuality, and is prepared to do more in those important fields, that I believe this law should be changed. Sir, I also make the point that the law falls unevenly on sections of society. All of us, even in this house, are capable of criminal actions. We are discouraged from doing so or becoming or taking part in criminal actions by the fact that we, in doing so, would lose the respect of our family, we would lose the respect of our fellow men, and finally, we are discouraged because of the punishment itself. But the greatest deterrent of all is that in moving outside of accepted standards, we transgress the norms of society. Accepted behavioural standards set up and adopted by society itself. I fully appreciate that tendencies to act outside normally accepted standards also fall unevenly. Some peculiarity of our chemistry, our background, our early childhood environment makes it more difficult for some than it does for others. I fully appreciate that. However, the attitudes of the community, its leaders, and most important, the attitude of Parliament itself is vital to the standards accepted by society at large. It seems to me, therefore, in balance, that any action seen to condone, any action seen to accept the homosexuality itself can have considerable influence on the views of society at large. And it is for that reason that I am unable to support the member for Egmont in his efforts to have the bill introduced and the law changed. Much better, I believe, for society to work hard in devoting more resources to understanding the influences that bring about homosexual behaviour. Much better, sir, to devote our efforts to correcting something which the House, I believe, has agreed is not a normal human situation. I regret, therefore, that I will be voting against the bill.
Mr. Downing.
I join with my colleagues in the House in congratulating the member for Egmont in bringing this bill before the House. I think we all know that it has taken a great deal of courage to do this, because we're in an area of discussion, an area of debate, which it is difficult to see clear lines of action which will follow the results of this bill. I think we're all aware of the degree of concern that is expressed by all people throughout the country in this matter, and I think it's equally true to say that we have no evidence to suggest that by the removing of legislation in this area in overseas countries there has been any lessening of the promiscuity which has been and is causing considerable concern. I believe it is right and it's proper that this topic should be discussed in this House, as there is increasing controversy on the subject of homosexual behaviour. We have had the anomalies pointed out to us today and last night very clearly of the situation which exists as far as the male is concerned and as far as the female is concerned. It would also be true to say, that we are not going to in any way improve the situation as far as the male's concerned by introducing legislation against female behaviour. And I think it's also true to say that the likelihood of reducing the activities, the obnoxious activities of a number of the groups is going to lessen with the passing of this legislation. I don't believe it will. I have over a number of years, in the last years in particular, heard many very convincing arguments for changing the law in relation to homosexual acts. And while they're very convincing and they're very logical, they are to a very great degree academic and largely ignore the very offensive behaviour which undoubtedly causes considerable concern in the community. I think it is true, and one of the difficulties with which we are confronted is that we are able to obtain driving licenses at 15. It is unlawful and illegal to drive under the age of 15. It is acceptable above that. Likewise, the laws relating to drinking. Likewise, the law as far as voting is concerned. What we are saying now, Mr. Speaker, is that we are going to have an age whereby certain acts are acceptable above an age, they're unacceptable below that age. And this is one of the difficulties that I find in making a decision as far as changing this legislation is concerned. I fully appreciate the fact that this anomaly does exist in the law, but it's equally true to say that, as has been pointed out by the member for Rodney, that is that there is no mandatory sentence attached to this as it appears on the board at the moment. In other words, there is no imprisonment involved, and a lot has been made of this side of the argument. But as I say, it has not been proved and shown that that is sufficient reason for changing the law. I think when we make a change in the law, we must be extremely careful. I see that has been pointed out in this bill that everything relates to this magic age. It does appear that we don't consider that those people above that age can be influenced or can be seriously influenced. But I would suggest, Mr. Speaker, that they are and can be seriously influenced and generally have a serious effect on the lowering of the moral standards. I think that a great disservice is done to this cause by such movements as the Gay Liberation Movement and some of their publications. And I don't believe anybody in this House would condone the material which they put out. I'm saying here particular issues of some of their branches. I'm referring in particular to one extremely offensive article which appeared from Christchurch earlier this year. This article was written by a self-confessed practicing homosexual, and he was glorifying the acts of the Arabs. He even went further to state that those on whom this act had been acted were actually changed psychologically as a result of it. I'm quite certain in this area a lot of very serious and careful thought should be given before making a move to change this legislation. I think it has also been very noticeable, while the agitation to change the bill has been going on, the act rather, has been going on for many years, It's been evident that these groups have been parading the streets, have been putting out an increasing volume of material and literature to advance their cause, but I think it is having the reverse effect as far as the public is concerned. While I do believe that there could be a change made to the law, I am not convinced, and have not been convinced from the arguments, that this bill as presented, or with the amendments suggested, would answer the necessary criteria which would be required to make a change which would be to the advancement and in the interests of our society. For this reason, Mr. Speaker, I find it impossible to support this bill. While recognising the difficulties and the individual problems that are associated with it, I feel that the bill in its present form does not and would not do what it claims to.
Mr. Bolger.
Speaker, I rise late in the debate to speak briefly on this bill, sir. And like my colleague, the member for Franklin, I was involved early in the discussions with the member for Egmont, with those who sought a reform in the law. And I listened, sir, with interest to the submissions they placed before us and to the arguments they advanced. I must confess that they were unable to show us or to indicate to us where the operation of the present law was repressive or in any way was being harsh on those who had a natural inclination towards homosexual acts. Sir, I state quite clearly that although I understand and sympathise with the intention of this bill, I will not, sir, be voting for the second reading of this. The reasons advanced for the bill fall broadly into three main categories as I hear them. One, compassion. A very laudable sentiment. Compassion for those who are so inclined. Two, that the law as present written cannot be enforced. And three, that the present law permits the ostracization or blackmail of a person so inclined. Could we briefly look at those three arguments? There are many sectors in society, sir, I submit, who require compassion, but they all come under the same general law. We have, and we know, within society, those who are much more prone to violence, much more prone to violent acts, and yet they, sir, excuse me, yet they, sir, come under the general bill regarding violence in society. We also, sir, have the question of the law being unable to be enforced. There are many laws that are extremely difficult to enforce. The simple law on theft is most probably enforced only 50% of times that theft occurs. But we do not suggest that we alter the law because it is difficult to enforce that law or many others. We also then look at the question of blackmail. Sir, unless society's attitudes towards the state of an active homosexual alters, the possibility of blackmail will not be removed by the passage of the legislation we are present debating. So this also would not be achieved if we vote in favour of the bill. Those who speak, sir, in favour of the bill advance, as I read there or listen to them, that they don't consider that it is a natural act. They are totally opposed to perverting the young, and they are opposed to lowering the general standards of society. Sir, I submit that there is some inconsistency. Because in this bill, and I have waited, sir, to hear some explanation for it, in this bill we are excluding from its ramifications those who are in the armed forces and those who are in police force. I submit, sir, that the passage of this legislation creates another anomaly then. That for some reason, those who are in the army or in the police are considered more likely or more susceptible because they are excluded to homosexual activities. Because, sir, they are excluded. The member for Ruahini said they come under a different act, but they are still not permitted in private, as I read the act, they are still not permitted in private to engage in homosexual activities. I would think, sir, and I would advance the argument, that there would be probably no group, as a group, that would be more mature in its outlook than those two groups in society. And I wonder, sir, and I would invite someone to advance the reasons why it was considered desirable to exclude those two segments from the passage of this, from the ramifications, sir, of this legislation. Now, the question that must be discussed, sir, and was discussed in the committee stages, I understand from reading the evidence, and also has been raised in this House. This is the question of the definition of an adult. The bill, as originally introduced, accepted the old standard, if we might term it that, of an adult, 21 years. The bill has now lowered that to the age of 20 years. But as you are aware, sir, there is considerable agitation among those who support a reform in the law that the age should be lowered substantially below that of 20 years. And it is advanced by way of argument that heterosexual activity is permitted at the age of 16, that you are permitted to vote at the age of 18, and that it is repressive, that in this field of sexual activity you should be restrained until the age of 20. And probably the most, or the stronger arguments, the strong arguments, strongest arguments advanced in favour of this was from the Methodist Church's submissions, or the Public Questions Committee of the Methodist Church, to be more accurate. And they said there is justification for reducing this age to 18 years or alternatively to 16 years. In support of reducing the age to 16 years in the proposed amendment, it is noted that a girl of 16 years may consent to carnal knowledge with a man. It is difficult to find reasons that will permit such a girl to make a decision concerning her sexual conduct with either a male or a female, but yet deny the same right and responsibility to a 16-year-old male. So there are strong arguments abroad, sir, to reduce the age to 16, because that is the heterosexual age. But, sir, we must look at this question one step further. You will be aware that there is strong support in the community to lowering the age in which contraceptive advice and paraphernalia can be supplied to young girls. And it is logical that if we supply this to young girls, we will have to lower the age of consent for girls to less than 16 years. And we then can advance the argument that was advanced before, that we would have to lower the age of homosexual activity to a similar lower age. It is clear that the reason that the bill, and I'm quite sure this is the intention of the member for Egmont who is moving it, has retained an age of 20 years, is because he wants to be sure that a person has this strong and permanent orientation towards homosexual activities, and that those of a younger age should not be attracted temporarily and then finally committed to this type of action, or this type of sexual activity. But, sir, I submit that if we pass this bill, we will again be asked to reduce the age within the next few years on a continuing downward scale. And then we run into not only the armed forces, because we have a single group of males together, not only the police force, we run into the additional problems of our single-sex schools, who would then be placed in the same position. And will we exclude those from a passage of some future legislation, sir? I believe that the bill, though intending to correct the situation, which is frankly untidy, would produce a situation which would be equally untidy. And I don't in any way believe that the present situation is a perfect solution, because I don't believe there is a perfect solution. But what we have to ask ourselves is whether the alternative proposed under this bill would improve the situation or whether it would not. And in my submissions, it would not. Sir, there's been some discussion on the question of morality and its place in relation to the law. And there is some conflict here, no doubt. But Western society's laws are historically based on traditional morality. And that, I think, is a statement of fact. And let us consider on what other base or what other guide will we use to base our laws on. If, sir, we do not have this base to our laws, what will we substitute? I submit, and I know, that there are many interpretations as to where a moral stand should be taken. But I do not believe it is simple or it is accurate to say that morality has no place in drafting laws in this country. It has always been a guideline. It has always established some degree of parameters on an area under discussion and always provided lawmakers down through history in New Zealand with guidance, if not direct solutions to the problems of writing law. Sir, it's been put forward by many that there is no solution to the problem of a homosexual to place him in prison. I don't disagree with that. But, sir, the position is quite clear. The law does not automatically, on those very rare occasions that a homosexual is brought before the courts, have to punish such a person to prison. There are many other punishments that are available to the law. And this, sir, I think should be understood by all. It is not simply a matter, sir, of immediately ending up in jail. And I would suggest on the evidence that was, for the discussions I had earlier before this bill was brought to the House, that there are very, very few homosexuals in jail for the simple reason or the sole reason that they are practicing homosexuals. There is one that could be clarified. And this is that there is no law against having homosexual inclinations. None whatsoever. Just as there's no law for being hot-tempered or being inclined to be light-fingered. There is a law against violence when you actively participate in violence. There's a law against light-fingered if you actively steal something. There is a law, sir, against homosexual activities when you partake in them. Not merely, sir, the condition of being a homosexual is not illegal under the law as it stands at the present time. Sir, for these reasons and for others, I will be voting against the second reading of this bill.
The Honourable Mr. Walding.
Since the whole question has been answered quite extensively, and I have nothing much additional to add, but I intend to support the second reading because I believe that the present law is at least illogical and unfair and unenforceable. I think it's illogical and unfair in that it discriminates against women and men. I think it's unenforceable too, if in fact the state isn't to have the power of easy access to the bedrooms of the nation, and once we give them that right to try and determine or to influence what are natural acts and what are unnatural acts, or what are normal, what is unnormal, we create a dangerous precedent that the state should not become involved in these issues in that way. I accept also that for some people, there's no matter what their sexual inclinations are, they've got no way whatsoever of changing them, any more than they have of changing their eyes from blue to brown. I do accept that also that these people in the past have been subject to a great deal of misery, they've been subject to intimidation, and they've been subject to blackmail, and that's undesirable. I also accept and I support for Dr. Wall's proposition that there should be some restraint on the activities of those who seek to advocate a different lifestyle. And I think these extremists do the whole cause a disservice, because I do believe in these cases that people with bisexual sort of tendencies can be influenced. And if they are exposed at an early age to this type of promotion, if you like, then it can influence them and do untold harm. And whilst I can't accept the amendments that Dr. Wall has proposed, I would still like to examine with the opportunity later on to see if something can be done in this regard, because I think it is quite important. My own early days at sea, you know, there's quite a bit of this activity going on. So enough there to at least convince me that young people can be influenced in a way that they should not be. I think no matter what the law is, the social stigma will remain, and that's still the most powerful influence against the type of activity that's referred to here. But I say again that the present law is illogical, it's unenforceable, and I intend to support the further progress of this measure before the House.
Mr. Comba.
Mr. Speaker, during the course of the 1972 election campaign, I, and I have no doubt most candidates for Parliament at that time, were asked at some stage on a public platform what our views were relating to homosexuality. I gave what I know to be an honest answer at that time. I was not fully enough informed as to the full ramifications of any proposed change to be able to state categorically at that time my views on the issue. But I did give a pledge to people of my electorate in 1972 that I would apprise myself of the background and the ramifications of any proposed change. And this I have done. There has been a lot of debate about a program, the Dr. Brian Edwards program on television, which openly discussed the whole practice of homosexuality. Within 1 week of that program, during the course of my moving around my electorate, I met with and had a very forthright discussion with one of the people who participated in that particular program. I must confess that as a result of all the discussions and the welter of paper, observations, of submissions, that I, as someone in this House commented during the debate on the Hospitals Amendment Bill, have been torn in two directions. And I have been asking myself if the law as at present written, and more importantly interpreted by authorities, as oppressive and unfair to practicing homosexuals. I think 4 points emerge, and I will be brief in my observations. Every parliament in every country legislates in some way in the moral field. Under the existing law, no homosexual has to go to jail. There is no mandatory jail sentence, although conceivably, as the law stands now, there is a maximum jail sentence which can be imposed. If we remove the legal sanction regarding adult homosexuality, the fact is that, in my opinion, the social stigma remains, and this point was confirmed by the Minister for Overseas Trade just a few minutes ago. The proposed bill won't mean more acceptance for them. And as other members have observed, it is possible that if this measure is passed, there will be public pressure on Parliament again in a year or two or five to reduce the age of consent in this regard, down to 18, 16, and so on. If the law is changed now, will it lead to a more overt aggressiveness on the part of homosexuals? We can only speculate on that. But again, I believe that if any member has any doubt, he should vote against the bill. The fact is that we do have a law on our statute books now, and we are proposing to amend that in the way suggested by my colleague, the member for Egmont, and as brought out in the select committee hearings. Any enactment, Mr. Speaker, by this Parliament to change the law must be seen, rightly or wrongly, to condone the act of homosexuality. I know that is not the intent of the bill, and certainly not the intent of my colleague, the member for Egmont. But it will be seen, I repeat, rightly or wrongly, by the public to, in some degree, condone the homosexual act. I agree that the state has no place in the bedroom of the country. But the fact is that we are debating here something that goes far beyond that. I do not believe that the amendment will lift the threat of blackmail, which is appalled by all members of this House. Everyone who has spoken either in favour or against the bill has made some passing reference to that fact. No one has yet convinced me or has made any strong attempt to indicate that homosexual behaviour is normal or natural. It is a state. Many males are, of course, born with strong homosexual traits, and that is accepted by me. But I ask myself, should we do anything as a Parliament to encourage or condone a move to a situation where homosexuality is accepted and where we might give people who are torn between the homosexual and heterosexual situation to give them the easy way, as it were, to adopt the homosexual trait? I don't believe it is the role, indeed the duty of Parliament to do such a thing. Mr. Speaker, I am very, very sympathetic to the plight of males who find that they have strong homosexual characteristics. And I do not say that in any patronizing manner. I believe that with help, certain of these people can be counseled to help them through what is often for them a very difficult period. And of course, the whole question of the home environment has been mentioned and brought out in earlier debate, and I will not elaborate further on it. But I know that that does not cover the whole situation. I repeat again that I have weighed up in my own conscience all the views that have been expressed over the last 2.5 years since the election, and when I gave a promise to the people of my electorate that I would look very, very closely at the ramifications of change. I am finally swayed by the fact that under the law as it is written and interpreted now, there is no jail sentence mandatory. No mandatory jail sentence which can or will likely be imposed by the courts of New Zealand. I am also guided to the fact that the passage of this bill will not change the social stigma which will attach to people who are homosexuals. Mr. Speaker, it's after taking into account all of these considerations, without malice or heat or antagonism to any person, that I will be voting against the second reading of this bill.
The Right Honourable Sir John Marshall.
I just want to say just simply and directly at the beginning of what I wish to say about this bill that I'm opposed to legalising homosexual behaviour. In my view, it's an unnatural act, and I don't see any way in which it could reasonably be claimed to be otherwise. The human body is made for sexual relations between a man and a woman, and not for a man with another man. And as I see it, it is, yes, or a woman with another woman. And for me, that seems to mean that homosexual behavior, whether between two men or two women, is a perversion. And for me, it is not only unnatural, but repulsive. And I know that there are some who don't take that view. But I think a distinction should be made very clearly between homosexual tendencies, which some people unfortunately have, and homosexual behavior. There are, I believe, a number of people who are homosexuals, who live with the problem and keep it to themselves. And for them there is no condemnation. But there should be understanding and commendation for the restraint that they show. And there is nothing illegal or immoral in being a homosexual. What most people, and as far as I can gather, all members of the House regard as immoral is the performing of sexual acts with persons of the same sex. I would agree that if homosexual behavior was only a moral issue, if homosexual behavior between two people of the same sex had no other consequence, that it might be left as a matter of morality only. But in my view, homosexual behavior does raise more than moral issues. I believe it has social consequences. I believe it has public consequences, which ought to be the concern of the community and the responsibility of the state. In the first place, I think that it is a responsibility of the state. I'm not talking now about government, but of the community as a whole, to be concerned about the preservation and protection of the family. I think the maintenance of family life is important for the stability and the happiness of our community. And I'm therefore concerned that a form of conduct which in my view is incompatible with the preservation of family life should be legalized. I believe there are people who have, as I've said, homosexual tendencies who do not give way to them. There are others who might go either way, who might become addicted to homosexual behavior, or who might develop as normal people having normal sexual relationships. If homosexual behavior were legalized, as this bill proposes, it would cease to have the restraint of the law to the extent that it then became more widely practiced. It would, in my view, tend to undermine what might otherwise have been a normal family relationship. For the same reason, legalizing of homosexual behavior would strike at a fundamental responsibility of the state, as I see it, to protect the community from the spread of practices which are unnatural, which are a perversion, and which, if they were to spread, would threaten the future of the race. The spreading of this unnatural perversion, in my view, has in it the seeds of national degeneration. There have been speakers in this debate who have referred to the fact that in Britain and in a number of other countries, homosexual behavior between consenting males in private has been legalized. And they have claimed that this has been done without apparent harm. I wish I could feel that that was so, but I don't think that the present social and economic conditions in Britain, to name only one country, provide a model for this country to follow. It is sad that this should be so. It's very sad for those who have a great affection for Britain. But the plain fact is that a malaise has come upon that once great country. There is a general permissiveness and a lack of discipline and self-control which I would like to see encouraged in this country. The attitude to homosexual behavior in Britain, of course, is just a small facet of that general malaise, but I want to have no part of it. It's been claimed in this debate, and I believe wrongly, that the law as it now stands is not enforced and not enforceable. It's true that the police don't invade private places where these offences are likely to be performed. I certainly wouldn't support that kind of intrusion. But when the police do have evidence of these offences, proceedings are taken in the ordinary course of the administration of the law. And this is common enough in the administration of laws of this kind, and is not a reason for repealing it. There is some evidence that wife beating still goes on to some extent in this country, and occasionally a husband is brought before the court for assaulting his wife. But the fact that very few such cases come to the notice of the police, even though they may be more prevalent, is not an argument for legalizing wife beating. And similarly, the fact that there are very few cases of prosecutions for homosexual behavior is not a case for repealing the law. Mr. Speaker, I would concede that imprisonment is not normally an appropriate punishment. But as has been pointed out, that is not the only deterrent that is available to the law. And I would certainly favour a reform, if it's necessary, to amend the law to provide for other forms of punishment, for periodic detention, for fines, for probation, for requirements as to treatment. But I believe that that can in any case be done now. Mr. Speaker, the final comment that I make is that I would hope that if this bill does get to the committee stages, that the amendment proposed by the member for Pararua will not be accepted. It seems to me that that, and I don't propose to debate the merits of it, that would be a very retrograde step. Mr. Speaker, for these reasons, I am not prepared to support this bill.
Mr. Young, in reply.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank all members who have taken part in this debate. I have an understanding for and with those who have struggled with their consciences before they have decided how they will speak in this debate and how they will vote on this measure. I think all of us have been able to think past an instinction that we have within us and consider the plight of people whose feelings, sir, we do not feel it is easy to comprehend. Mr. Speaker, naturally, I thank those who have indicated their support for the provisions in my bill, and particularly those, sir, who have stood on their feet in this House and have acknowledged that over the course of years they have changed their opinion. Never an easy thing to do, sir. I also understand those who have spoken against the proposals of the Crimes Amendment Bill because of a deep religious conviction. Yet I know there are many others of equally deep religious convictions who strongly favour the measure. Mr. Speaker, one cannot help but be persuaded by the support from a wide section of the established churches for the provisions that are contained in my bill. Mr. Speaker, there has been some suggestion, and one particularly from my colleague, the member for Rodney, that, well, we shouldn't really change the law or even propose to change it because there is no one in prison at the present time. Sir, I can only refer him to submissions that were made by the New Zealand Association of Probation Officers to the Select Committee. And they said this, sir: arrest, trial and sentence for a homosexual who is otherwise a law-abiding citizen can be devastating. Career opportunities may be destroyed. Purpose and goal in life may be lost. Satisfactory adjustment and a worthwhile contribution to society can become more difficult. Furthermore, sir, they say, it may be argued that adult persons engaged in homosexual activities in private at the present time are not at risk of prosecution. Sir, the probation officers say this: in our experience, this is not always so. There also remains for the persons concerned a knowledge that the law has been broken, a constant fear of detection, and the possibility of the various forms of extortion. Mr. Speaker, I do not propose to attribute to specific members whose arguments have been in opposition to the bill. But let me say this. I find it difficult to understand the opinion of members whose inflexibility of opinion has required them to argue on matters not contained, nor even implied in the measure. Sir, the question of the age of consent was argued on the basis of next it will be 18, then it may be 16, then it may be 14, then it may disappear altogether. Sir, the members who used these arguments know full well that a number of submissions were made to the Select Committee and these submissions advocated a lower age of consent for Clause 2 of the bill. But that in spite of this, the consensus of opinion of the committee and the provisions of this bill was that the age of consent should be the age of 20. Sir, some who have argued against the bill have equated legality with morality, as indeed the Sir John did, who preceded me immediately in this debate. There have been other criticisms, sir, about the definition of in private and a criticism of the definition of a place of resort from the member for Tauranga. Sir, I point out that those matters are not contained in the bill. They have been removed by the amendments. Mr. Speaker, I make the point, as I have done time and again, that it is essential we define between what is legal and what is moral. Sir, those who oppose the bill have three main arguments. Society needs a moral code. Any breach of this code weakens society, even where no harm is accompanying the breach. Therefore, the law should reinforce this moral code. But, sir, surely this can only apply when everyone shares the same code of morality, and those who support this idea must claim that morality must be one with the whole of society. Today, sir, our society is heterogeneous, varied. There are various views of the morality involved, and I'm sure that at present a majority of New Zealanders support a change in the law. Sir, in any case, how does one judge in a law what is moral? Secondly, sir, it is said that punishing the homosexual demonstrates society's condemnation of the act. Sir, punishment is usually held to be either retribution or deterrent. That is, it does something to the individual to make him atone for what he's done, or it prevents others, sir, from doing the same thing. In fact, sir, the present law does so few times, there are consequently few prosecutions. Therefore, sir, it is reasonable to assume that society as a whole cannot feel strongly about the need for punishment. Another point of view suggests that if society's laws don't condemn acts, then they must be taken to condone them. Sir, that is simply not correct. This amount of sociological research that shows that people don't necessarily associate what is morally wrong with what is illegal, and that by repealing a law, people would not feel that moral sanctions are weakened. Thirdly, sir, there are those who state that the law, though ineffective, is a way of showing society's condemnation, and its repeal would weaken the moral condemnation and lead to a change of morality and more permissiveness. Sir, I believe this is completely incorrect. People have a very clear idea on what is morally wrong. At the same time, they have a very unclear idea of what is against the law. Let me ask this question, sir. What good does it is there to have a law against homosexuality if the law doesn't stop those who at present are homosexuals? And, sir, sending these people to prison won't stop them either. Mr. Speaker, there is no point in a member suggesting, well, although the penalty is not imposed, we will leave it there. It is our responsibility as legislators to ensure that penalties fit the crime and that the penalties are applied. Sir, unless the law is more rigidly enforced than at present, fear of being caught won't stop anyone either. In fact, legal enforcement, sir, of morality by punishment may indeed be a bad thing. There is a grave danger that the moral sense may wither away and leave only a fear of punishment. Mr. Speaker, people conforming through fear and not through belief, I don't believe is the solution that is sought even by those who oppose this measure. Sir, everyone has the right to moral views and the right to persuade or educate others to know what is morally right. But the law does not do this, and nor should it have this responsibility. Sir, let me repeat my invitation to those members who have argued that the laws and the morals are indivisible. If they consider that lesbian acts are immoral, and I believe that they would hold this point of view, then let one of them introduce a bill making this the case. Similarly, sir, if those opposed to the reform in my measure insist that the present law is a bastion for morality, then it is their responsibility to see that the present law is enforced. Otherwise, sir, their case has no logic. Sir, my amendment to the Crimes Act is proposed on the basis of humanity, of logic, and of equality. I believe New Zealand is a country where these values are held high. Sir, let me conclude my summary by repeating what I said in my introductory speech. There are times and countries where humanity becomes lost in laws inherited from the past. Equity, compassion, and logic each demand that parliaments alter such laws. Sir, I move the second reading of the Crimes Amendment Bill.
The question is that the Crimes Amendment Bill be now read a second time. As many as of that opinion will say aye.
Aye.
The contrary opinion will say no.
No.
The noes have it.
Ayes have it.
Division called for.
Yes.
Ring the bells.
The bells are ringing in Parliament's buildings, summoning all members to the chamber to vote in a division. We'll return to the House when Mr. Speaker puts the question again. Until this happens, an interval of music.
The question is that the Crimes Amendment Bill be now read a second time. The ayes will go to the right, the noes will go to the left. Tellers for the ayes, Mr. V. Young and Dr. Bassett. Tellers for the noes, the Honourable Mr. Thompson and Mr. Kirk.